Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. The global death toll from the coronavirus reaching nearly 300,000 and more than 4 million people infected. The pandemic has spooked everyone. But one group faces additional risks and consequences, and that is people with disabilities. On today's Majlis podcast, we are taking a closer look on ways in which the virus has affected Central Asia's special citizens and what is done about it. To discuss these, I'm joined by Lola Nasreddinova, founder and executive director of IRODA, which is a Parents of Children with Autism initiative in Tajikistan, Medina Karsakpayeva, PhD researcher who's doing research about people with physical disabilities and their access to higher education in Kazakhstan, Tahmina Hakimova-Reis, activist on the inclusion of people with Down syndrome in Tajikistan. She's also the founder of Nazari Digar, a registered charity in the UK. Dilmurat Yusupov, PhD researcher advocating for disability rights and inclusive development in Uzbekistan. Dilmurat is currently with the University of Sussex in the UK. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi, is also with us. Bruce is currently in Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So, Dilmurat, since the topic was suggested by you, and I'm glad that we are talking about this today, so let's start with you. What specific situation has prompted you to propose this topic?
First of all, I thought that there is a lack of information and response to the needs of disabled people in the region. In usual times, not in these kind of difficult times like a COVID-19 pandemic, disabled people are usually left behind. So I thought it would be better to talk about this more in more detail and shed the light to what are the needs and what are the struggles of disabled people on the ground. So
what I had in mind is people with disabilities are unfortunately, as you say, facing additional challenges everywhere these days. But what is that which strikes out in Central Asia or in your country, Uzbekistan?
No, first of all, I think the social support and the social protection of disabled people is not adequate. And pandemic adds on like additional barriers for disabled people. For example, there can be physical barriers to access hygiene facilities because they need to touch their wheelchairs, rehabilitation equipment, any assistive tools. They also cannot enact social distancing. For example, many people are talking about social distancing, but there are many disabled who rely on support and care from others. So they cannot enact social distancing because they rely on the care outside, from outside. And also, there can be a difficulty in accessing information because all the information about COVID-19 and how to fight this pandemic may be not accessible to disabled people like blind, people with learning disabilities, deaf people who rely on sign language. Right. So all these issues are there. So.
Okay, so let's bring in Lola. Lola, you are in Tajikistan. The points that raised by Dilmurat, which one of them kind of resonates more than the other in the current realities of your country where the COVID cases are apparently on the rise?
Yes, definitely everything which was mentioned by Dilmurat is currently happening in Tajikistan, and I will not repeat them, but also I can add that one of the big issues is also the institutionalization, and many people with disabilities, specifically with mental disabilities, are based in institutions as well as baby homes and institutions for adolescents and adults, and also that creates more issues and problems because it's a kind of, you know, isolated environment and where the virus could spread very fast. And another big problem, like as we're working specifically with people with autism, it's definitely very hard for most of them to understand the rules of social distance, of the even physical distance, and the, all these kind of things of washing hands and look after themselves and have a, you know, healthy way of life. So it's definitely very hard. All these things still happening, but for us, for our organization and for our beneficiaries, and we're currently working with 160 children and adolescents with autism and neurodevelopmental disabilities. That was definitely very hard to, before it was hard to follow all these rules, and now, of course, it's difficult to stay at home and have enough support, which is not, still is not existent, still is not enough.
Tamina, you also work with the children children with Down syndrome. Is there anything you would like to add to what Lola has been saying?
As you know, my organization just announced urgent appeal to highlight the issues and challenges that children with Down syndrome might have, children and people with Down syndrome. I mean, it's not just children with Down syndrome, but I've been talking to the union of people with disabilities of Tajikistan, just to find out what issues they have and what are the government actions and is anyone helping, and nobody's helping in a way that giving maybe some product, some food, but it's just people who are the charities, the civil activists. But because, as you know, the situation in Tajikistan is, because they hide it so for so long, it's very critical. So civil activists, not the government, the civil activists are sort of trying to, you know, buy all the PPEs, all the protective uniforms and everything else to protect our doctors. And then when, you know, the situation is like this, who's going to talk about or think about people with these disabilities? Like Dilmurad, you mentioned the leaflets, for example, the information leaflets, how to protect yourself for deaf people, for blind people, for, you know, and many, many different types of disabilities. I'm not even talking about Down syndrome yet. So these are, apparently they started to do this, the union of people with disabilities, but because many of them got ill, the employees, they said that they had four employees and out of four, three of them are ill now, got infected by coronavirus. So it sort of, they didn't finish those leaflets as well.
Right. Thank you very much. Let me bring in Medina here. Medina, your focus is slightly different. Also, you are in Budapest, which is not really a bright spot to draw a comparison with any other country. But nevertheless, let me ask this. Though the authorities in Kazakhstan say that things are getting better, but Kazakhstan is by far the most affected nation in Central Asia. Anything to add in terms of the impact of COVID on people with physical disability, not necessarily children that Tahmina and Lola was talking about, but people of all age?
In terms of Kazakhstan, I'm currently in Almaty, actually. Oh. I had to go back home because of the virus outbreak. But I've been discussing this question, the statistical data, the data, general data on infected people in Kazakhstan. And as you mentioned, we've got quite a big number in the region. But when it comes to disabled people or people with disabilities, as of now, I could not find any like certain information on how many of them were infected. And the only information which is available, and it's connected to support people with special needs during these days, is about social policy services from the Ministry of Social Protection, like some financial support, which is provided to people of all the three groups of disability. And that's it, basically. And also, we've got, like, in terms of, like, additional limitations, which we already have, people like myself with physical disability in life, I think this social distancing is kind of replicating of our usual way of living. Because, you know, when you have a physical disability, when you use a wheelchair, you get to stay at home almost all the time if you happen to be born in one of the Central Asian countries. I'm saying it from my own experience. And in terms of education, what I wanted to add, that because of the coronavirus outbreak, most of the special schools, like boarding schools for kids with disabilities in Kazakhstan, in Almaty, they had to be closed. So that's one of the really big issues.
Let me help you with this. You said that as a special citizen of Central Asia and Kazakhstan, of course, we know that things are not ideal, even in ordinary days for people with disabilities in Central Asia. Now we have coronavirus. Which ways this has affected your own life? And in corresponding to that, how authorities are responding to this?
If we talk about my own life, I've been just stuck at home since I came like 2 months ago. I live in Almaty, and luckily I have supportive family and my flat in one of the accessible buildings. But as many other my peers in Kazakhstan and Almaty, we just stay at home, and I don't feel like I'm really like affected. But at the first, it was a big kind of like frustration, because I was feeling like I'm going back in my old life before going abroad, before studying, before discovering other countries.
Why you say that?
Sorry?
Why you say that?
Why? Because of this social distance, like you have to stay at home. You just communicate with, in my case, I communicate with my parents, my very close relatives. That's it. And, you know, all of these online initiatives like webinars and online teaching, which I am also doing for my university in Budapest, is not going to replace, you know, the regular or personal communication.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bruce, let me also bring you here. There's a lot to unpack from the comments that we have heard so far from our colleagues. But when we say people with disabilities, we can't be putting all of them in one category. So what group of people proved to be more vulnerable to this?
That would be really difficult to say. And I think our guests so far have wonderfully explained all the real challenges. Now, look, if you have hearing problems or vision problems, then how can you see or hear the information that you need to know? Or if you have learning disabilities or something, do you understand what that is? 2 meter radius from people, right? This is great. There's pictures from all over the world of people who don't get that. Mm. College students and stuff, right? It's one thing to show you got to wash your hands. That's pretty simple. But, some people might. Now, 2 meters is that's already a challenge for anybody, it seems like. They don't seem to understand exactly how that far that is in a lot of times. So there's problems with that. Now, if you're someone, as we mentioned, if you have a mobility problem and you're dependent on someone to come and help you in and out of the house or something, or possibly bring you something that you need, food, for instance, something like that, then all of a sudden everyone's on lockdown and you can't do that. Now, if you're sufficiently independent that you, even with some mobility problems, you can get out and go to the store. You know, we've seen some of these lockdowns, like in Kazakhstan, for instance, where you couldn't go more than 100. You weren't supposed to be more than 100 meters from your home unless you have special permission. Yeah. You need this special permission right away if you're living by yourself and you're trying to take care of yourself and you have mobility problems. How easy is it to get that? Mm. And what happens to you if you're out on the street and you're more than 100 meters from home because you're trying to get food, you know, and you haven't got this kind of permission yet? So it's harder for those people to get it.
Right.
You know, I mean, the list just goes on and on. I can imagine on some level, everyone has to be. That has these kind of challenges is going to be affected with this because, you know, as we heard, the sad thing about this is it's kind of an every man for every man or woman for themselves situation at the moment. And, people, all governments and local communities are trying to prioritize what they need. And unfortunately, in the shuffle, a lot of times people don't remember, oh my God, you know, there's people that they have to have food brought to their house or they need to get outside once in a while, just outside in the sun for a few minutes. Someone's got to go over, you know, help them outside, sit on the bench for a little bit and be with them and talk with them because this is important, you know. I mean, social distancing, yes, I understand that, but everyone has to have some social interaction. Yeah. You can't leave people alone, you know.
Colleagues, also, this is not the area of my particular expertise, so I would encourage all of you to jump in whenever you feel wanting to add something into the discussion. So please don't wait for me to invite you so that we have a meaningful chat here. So on that note, a number of you are researchers. That brings me to the education, which earlier Madina was also talking about. In many countries, I guess schools are closed and they switched to some sort of online learning. How kids with disabilities are coping with this? Are schools closed in Tajikistan, Lola?
Yes. Their schools officially closed, and now it seems like it will be till the 16th of August. Mm-hmm. So all our children with disabilities who've been studying the inclusive classes, now they stay home. And unfortunately, the discussion to organize the online and video sessions for all children, so not just for children with disabilities, and we've been involved to this group, working group, to help the Minister of Education to create like supportive, inclusive sessions for children with disabilities as well, but that was not happened, unfortunately. And then we've heard that because all children now on the vacation and the school will start only in 16, so there will be no distance learning for any of the children. So this is one of the big issues now, because now we are creating the data, so we're asking each parent about different issues. So the first, the behavior of the child, the second is a learning process, and the third is all other problems in the family, so like violence, financial problems, stress, tensor, and all the things. And most of the parents say, of course, because of their children are not occupied, it creates more problems for them. And it's not just for children with autism, of course, it's for any children. It's for any children, it's a big issue now to stay home. So now we all together, like NGOs and parents, trying to support them and create our own online sessions. So it's not now coming from the like official education settings or from the schools, but NGOs trying to do and help parents to have their own individual sessions online. Of course, not all families can join this program because of the internet, and internet is quite expensive in Tajikistan, and for many families it's quite hard. So we're trying to find the opportunities for parents who are too much vulnerable to find the way to pay for their internet. And of course, another issue is for parents' stress. The parental stress is getting high, because if your child have behavior problems, and of course most of our families, they've been affected by COVID, and our team as well. So it's also very hard when you have to take care about the child, your own health problem. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, government doesn't give the individual assistance, like individual support. And of course, even that will be there. You can't use individual support now because of these old problems and the contagious of the virus. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is now to support families at least by phone calls and internet. So we're using Viber groups, we're using Zoom sessions, all of the things.
Yeah, Lola, as an NGO community, you guys are stepping in where authorities are failing to act and provide to people what they need in this critical time. But where you get your help? I mean, who is helping you to continue what you are doing?
Very briefly, we have government funding for the staff. So it's a salary for the staff and the food for the children who stay on daycare or respite program just for the daytime. And of course, what we have now, we still have a salary for our staff, that our staff can continue their online working. And that's it. But we don't have the governmental support for internet, for example, or for other things. Of course, for like internet, online sessions, Zoom sessions, and some kind of support with financial support, we're trying to apply to international organizations. And now we're on the stage to prepare the video sessions, like video lessons, that we can also send to the families. We can't cover all families now, and it's very hard for most of the families, but we're trying to do that.
Right. Thank you for that. Dilmurat, what about Uzbekistan? How authorities there are dealing with this specific situation in terms of the continued education of kids with disabilities?
The response of the Ministry of Public Education in Uzbekistan was really good, I think, because they managed to, in a really quick time, to manage to organize lessons on TV. And also they provided sign language interpretation for deaf and hard of hearing children. And also they were trying hard. It was also recognized by World Bank and other institutions that it was working well. But there were some other issues, like before, even in there are specialized schools for children with disabilities, like specialized schools for the blind and for the deaf children. And their program is a bit different. They are separate schools, and they have, if a usual school is like 11 years, and their program is for extended until 12 years. And the issue was that the lessons that were delivered through TV were not like in line with the program of the specialized schools. And sign language interpreters, there were some issues with the sign language interpretation, that it was not correctly interpreted. And because of the specialized schools were relying more on lip reading, and not like there was a ban of using sign language at specialized schools for deaf children. So there was a problem before this. But on the other hand, the government was doing good for providing these TV classes, but again, also uploading them on YouTube. But the problem is, again, with the internet and access.
You know, these technologies are not available to everyone in the country, isn't it? I mean, how the kids with disabilities in countryside, how they are coping with this?
Those kids that were sent to specialized schools, because specialized schools, they are also boarding schools. They have dormitories for children, and when the lockdown happened, many children were sent home to the regions with no access to the internet, and low access, and even no access. And teachers at specialized boarding schools, they were using Telegram and creating groups, but many children, they couldn't access Telegram because they were in the region. So because they organized this, because they cannot follow the lessons on TV, on usual TV, because they have their own specific program.
Bruce, in Turkmenistan, of course, you know, they deny the existence of virus in the country, so there is not really much to talk about. But one striking point is, until recently, Tajikistan has been denying this too, and now it is health system is kind of overwhelmed by the influx of patients. So we will see how things will go in Turkmenistan. So is there anything to add on this specific aspect? Earlier, there were reportings that the authorities were testing school children for COVID-19 in Turkmenistan, where schools are still open, I guess.
They're doing some testing. At least we've heard they're doing some testing. You know, you got to remember that Turkmenistan's government just manages to get almost everything wrong. I mean, for instance, you know, you were talking about school children. Well, their parents have to pay for the disinfectant that they're supposed to put on their hands and everything when they come to school and, you know, after recess and when right before they go home. So the government isn't even helping. They say you have to have it, but they're not going to pay for it. You know, and one hates to even imagine how much of a burden this has got to be for, like, the disabled. I can't believe they're receiving very much help at all. I've certainly never seen it mentioned, you know, and like you said, the government doesn't even admit that they have any problems at all. So, you know, if you were affected, if you were in a neighborhood where a relative, a caregiver, maybe yourself, was infected with this virus, you couldn't expect anyone to even acknowledge that that was happening. If you needed extra benefits to get you through, on what basis could you claim those extra benefits? And in any case, you know, as we know, there's shortages of everything anyway, medicine, food, whatever. So, you know, I hate to even think of how bad it would be for someone who is handicapped in Turkmenistan right now.
Right. You know, let's expand this on some of the other aspects. In the West, there is a discussion about the failure by the authorities to create equal educational opportunities for official citizens about COVID-19. As some of you mentioned, the same thing is happening in Central Asia. And of course, the impact of stay-home orders, access to health, food security, and mental impact are also some other aspects that are widely discussed in the West. So where things stand in Central Asia on those aspects. Let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis. I'm joined by Lola Nasridinova, founder and executive director of IRODA, Madina Karsakpayeva, PhD researcher who is doing research about people with physical disabilities and their access to higher education in Kazakhstan, Tamina Hakimova, activist on the inclusion of people with Down syndrome in Tajikistan. She's also founder of Nazari Digar, a registered charity in the UK, Dilmurat Yusupov, PhD researcher advocating for disability rights and inclusive development in Uzbekistan, Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Europe, Ready for Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Europe, Ready for Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the challenges of special citizens of Central Asia during Corona times. Let's start with you, Tamina. Speaking of the disabilities, of course, they also have special needs, and these days, at least speaking of from the Western perspective here where I'm sitting, hospitals are packed. It is kind of understood these days that, you know, you shouldn't be going for normal checkup to your doctor. But people, kids especially with disabilities, they have needs. So how that is taking place in Tajikistan? Do they have access to a routine health check, health care?
Well, I think that there is no really sort of routine, like comparing what my son has here. My son has Down syndrome and he has the routine checks. And in Tajikistan, I haven't seen that among children with Down syndrome. And this is what my organization was actually established in 1.5 years. So we actually started our medical checks, annual medical checks in April. We started with heart checks. So 22 kids went to check the heart. And then we just wanted to start the eye check, vision check. So they should be routine heart check, eye check, thyroid levels and hearing. And then we had to stop because all this was happening. Obviously, I didn't believe that there wasn't any coronavirus in the country. I kept telling parents, please don't, you know, and we didn't know should we do it or not. But this consultation with doctors, they said, okay, we'll try. And parents really wanted to check their, to do these checks. It's important to them. And then at some point in April, we just had to stop, even though the doctors were saying it's all right, you know, it's no. You know, the hospitals are also the place where the virus might be. And given the, I don't know, hygiene, sanitation, whatever the situation of the hospitals in Tajikistan, we need to really protect our children. Obviously, if there are any urgent needs, any like, you know, for operations and surgeries, some heart issues, or heart surgeries, something like that, then they do. I don't really know what they do. It's just postponed. We have a girl who is due to have a heart surgery, but, you know, they just postponed because all the doctors, even the dentists, are Like, for example, in Khujand, where I'm from what I understand, I have lots of family who are doctors in the hospitals. And then even the dentists, any kind of doctors are, you know, poor. They're asking them to come and help. There are not enough doctors, so to fight coronavirus. Obviously, the routine checks, surgeries are sort of put aside. But I don't, maybe if there is, you know, super urgent something, that hopefully they will be done, but I haven't heard. But so that's why what we put, because children with Down syndrome, most of them have, you know, heart issues. You know that heart issues is, you know, one of the, it's dangerous. Hmm. It's, if they get coronavirus, it can be fatal.
Right. I would also say, Tahmina, that I think healthcare needs are really important, but as it was also already mentioned, that livelihood opportunities, like, because the basic need is now food and basic, like, food stuff, and the social protection, like social benefits that disabled people receive, are really inadequate. Like, they receive, in Uzbekistan, they receive $50. They heavily rely on their relatives. And if you imagine that if the relatives are not working and they are not earning money, so the whole household is kind of in a really grave situation. And in this kind of condition, like, their basic needs are food, and the health needs maybe go to the second, because they also need to pay for their, for example, if they want to go out, they need to pay for taxi service and to go to a doctor. And then usually they spend money when they receive healthcare services. Yeah,
again, probably I'm speaking here from the Western perspective. There are families who rely on the government handout for food. Are those food reaching to the people in need, especially elderly, special citizens in your countries?
Well, in Tajikistan, it's not really, you know, people give, like, and the government as well provides food if it's some kind of, mostly some kind of holidays. Mm. You know, they remember the, and they have all these lovely pictures with all the disabled people, and then they, you know, all over TV, giving them foods. So they remember them only on those occasions. And right now is the holy month of Ramadan. And when I was speaking to these people as well, Union of People with Disabilities, they also said that, you know, the people, mostly civil activists and people, because of Ramadan, providing more foods now. But what their concern was, and my concern personally, when I'm putting all this list of people who need food, is that most often the same people receive the same foods. If this, for example, the government gives it, or maybe some organizations, they have their own list. And the same people might get that support from government at the same time and from other organizations. This was their concern of people with disabilities. Please, you know, we have massive lists. They have 5,000 people, for example, from Tajikistan that are registered with them. And also to what Dilmurat said, that I totally 100%, 200% agree that at the moment, health sort of issues or checks is on the second place, because what I'm receiving every day from my families that I support and help is food. They just, even this morning, two families approached my colleagues. You know, I even heard the voicemail, and I was just sitting, like, oh my God, we need to help them, because the husbands who were in Russia, they're not working, and then there is no remittances, no money. The woman is sitting there with her mother-in-law, and she has a quite severely disabled child, and then you know, other children, and she's like, basically, we don't have anything to eat. Can you please help? And I receive it every day. And there are some families who got credit or loan from the banks, and the businesses are closed. They're sitting at home, husbands and, you know, all of them. And then, you know, they need the money to pay the credit and the interest rate as well. So what we're trying to do also now, to talk to some banks, there are only a few families that approached me to try to help to solve this issue. Because
So the way I understand it, there's no structure where government hands out food to people in need, especially with people with disabilities in these challenging times. Is it the correct translation of the reality there?
I was in favor of, in Uzbekistan, I was suggesting that the government should provide additional support in the form of additional benefits. For example, if they are giving like $50 per month, they could have given like additional like $50 on top of that, so that they can secure their livelihoods during the pandemic. But nothing of that happened. Uh-huh. And the government was against the pouring helicopter money, as it was told, like, it's not a good way. And the businesses were asked to help those vulnerable. So now we have these specific mahalla kind of community entity structures called mahalla. So they are now kind of collecting lists of people who are in need and then giving them to the local government. And the local government is asking the businesses to donate money. So, and I think that this is kind of putting the responsibility of the government on social protection to businesses, which is not a really good way of doing it. Mm-hmm. And also, in the beginning, there was a really good response from the civil society actors, like volunteers. And they were donating money, they were allocating food. But the government stopped this activity, saying it's risky for elderly, for disabled people, so that they can get the virus from the volunteers. And then they introduced this kind of centralized way of allocating food and basic foodstuffs. And there was another problem with this, because not so many people could reach to this center, the centralized center for allocating resources. And there was a hotline, 1197. Not so many disabled people, they could get through the hotline and get the help they need.
Maybe, Medina, you would like to jump in here. So how this food supplies to people in need, especially the ones with the disabilities, are worked out in Kazakhstan? Is this even a discussion there in Kazakhstan? Is this even a factor? What I'm saying is, like, if there is a structure like that, who is filling this need? Is this the government jumping in, or the civil societies are filling this gap? Tell us about how this thing is worked out there.
I think there's some kind of contradiction when I read the, since I don't meet people nowadays, but all the information I get now in terms of help to disabled population in Kazakhstan, in Almaty in particular, it's quite contradictory, because from one side, there's a big number of initiatives by each of Akimats or mayors, regions, in each of the Almaty districts, and they provide some, they call it like a food basket, something like this, and they provide it to the veterans, to people of all the three groups of disabilities, and additionally, some celebrities, young celebrities in Kazakhstan, they help to one of the main bank, which is called the Halyk Bank, I think.
Right.
They provide food to the whole country. But on the other side, we have Facebook group, and these days social media is becoming the only way to express yourself and to communicate, especially when it comes to people with disabilities. And in that group, as a member of that group, I see many people asking for help from different parts of not only Almaty, but Kazakhstan, asking about help and asking why they don't get food or addition to their pension, which is also governmental initiative. So that's why it's really contradictory. And I got an information today that, I guess it's one of the official things, but it says that almost 200,000 people with disabilities in Kazakhstan, they got some kind of help, but I think it's mainly on food help. Food support.
So, Bruce, we discussed the food challenges of people with disabilities and also their health challenges, education, and inadequate response by the authorities in the face of these challenges. Is there anything we are missing from discussion? We really need to wrap up discussion very quickly here.
The only thing I'm curious about is, are any of the organizations that our guests represent in touch with international organizations on some level? I mean, I know that you got probably reached out to different international organizations, but have you got any response, or is there a chance that some of these charitable organizations have contacted you?
Tamina, Lola, are you guys getting any help from anyone? Is there anyone contacting you? Like, you put out appeals, yes, but anyone responding to those calls? Anyone helping you?
Well, I think that in Tajikistan, for example, there's a really big appeal now from Tajiks. So Tajiks from the United States and Europe are putting a big appeal, and they're getting quite a bit of money, which is really good. But the first thing they want to do to protect the doctors, and then they feed the vulnerable. In my appeal, I'm getting support, but not from organizations, from charitable organizations. But we will write to, I think we're thinking about the strategy whom to write, because the appeal of Nazar Edigar UK was really to international community. What was striking me was that I didn't want to ask my competitors for support, because the others are collecting this money, but the first to help were again my friends and people who I know, Tajiks. So I don't know how, but we want to scream as much as we can, and in the UK we'll be submitting soon this week quite a bit of concepts or things like that to grab the attention of some trusts, maybe even private trusts. But big charities, I don't think we're getting that any attention from them.
Okay. Lola, what about you?
I can add that we're getting two kind of support. So one support is transforming the budget that we couldn't use for the kind of offline work. And we could transform that budget for this now COVID response. And that changes helped us. Actually, we did changes in budget from the government as well as a budget from the international organizations. Another organization which called GFC, they sent us their support to support the internet for staff and parents. So there this kind of things like, and we're still trying to get more support for parents who need like finance, food or internet or psychological support or lessons. Most of our staff was sick for the like more than 3 weeks, and now it's getting better. We also would like to organize the volunteer support for the doctors, for the families who need medicines, for those families who was affected by COVID but didn't had any medical support. So we're trying now to cooperate and work together in these issues.
Is there any specific organization that's in position to help you? I mean, in terms of your priority needs.
You mean international or national?
Both. Doesn't matter. The help needs to come.
So international, we have a partner which is called GFC. It's American organization, Global Fund for Children. This is, we used to work with them for more than 6 years before. Now we also working with them, and we have the first tranche of support of the beneficiaries of our organization. But of course, because we have a bigger network and lots of parents with disabilities living, as you mentioned, in rural areas, and they need much more support. And we have a network where there are more than 35 organizations, and we're trying to get information what they need and which kind of support we could give to them as well.
Right.
I think that UNICEF should be doing quite a bit on this. UNICEF and Save the Children, and you know, the embassies also in the country, you know, EU delegation. I try to, you know, like tag them, write to them with the appeal that I have also, that, you know, there are special kids here. Can you just, you know, pay attention? But I think especially UNICEF in the country should be doing, I know that they do really nice, you know, leaflets for kids and this and that. But, you know, like in terms of helping these, you know, first basic needs for the families and children.
In Uzbekistan, they were, UNICEF was providing accessible information, like with sign language interpretation, and UNDP, United Nations Development Program, they were also doing a lot about accessibility of information. But in terms of like social protection, I think it should be the on responsibility of the government. And I didn't see any kind of really targeted response from the government aimed at disabled children and adults.
Yeah, that also kind of brings us to a conclusion. Bruce, let me end this discussion with one final question. So it's a big issue, and we don't know how long we are faced with this. So what are the lessons to be learned from the way authorities have been handling this in Central Asia? It's just to the point of what Dilmurat has just mentioned.
That hopefully when they do these, you know, every government has some plan for an emergency, and hopefully this has reminded them that they really need to think a lot harder about how to help out the most vulnerable segments of their population when things go really bad. And let's face it, things are bad. Would like to think that something like this would have taught them a good lesson on distribution of medicines, food, you know, relief from bills, rents, mortgages, things like that, so that people can concentrate on being healthy, which is what you need right now.
Right. Thank you, Bruce. So with this, we have to conclude the debate for this week. We will get back to this next week, focusing on some other aspects of the COVID-19. So last week, we had a Kyrgyz doctor from Kyrgyzstan who launched a new initiative called Hi Doctor. At the end of the program, we asked him to give some brief description of what this project was about. So here, it kind of reminded me, Project Tahmina, that you are running, Nazari Digar, and also Lola, yours. I know there were some talks about this on the internet this week. So let it be our contribution to your work. So in two paragraphs, please tell us what this project is about, Nazari Digar, what you guys do and why you do.
Well, Nazari Digar is the initiative of parents of children with Down syndrome. So we have the two charities registered. So basically one charity, international charity, registered in the UK. And we have an NGO or public organization registered in Tajikistan. But essentially, the Nazari Digar UK is established to help Nazari Digar in Tajikistan, but potentially to help this whole Central Asia, children with Down syndrome in Central Asia as well. What we do is we provide, you know, the first of all is health. So the, as I said, mentioned before, the routine checks, medical checks are not provided at all to children with Down, people with Down syndrome. So we're establishing that, and then we provide the key thing for people with Down syndrome is speech, be it in Tajikistan, be it in England. So speech and language therapy, you know, educational psychologist sessions, a musical therapy, and we want to focus as well this year on adults with Down syndrome and teenagers.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Tahmina. Also, briefly, Lola, let's also get some information about IRODA, your NGO, what you guys up to.
Yes, so we're parents of children with autism initiatives, but for the last 5 years, so we're working for the 10 years in Tajikistan now, and for the last 5 years, we started to work with children with different neurodevelopmental disabilities from 0 to 25 years old. So we have early intervention program, we have adaptive class, inclusive education program, vocational trainings, the employment, support employment, and independent living program. And of course, we're working as well as the children and adolescents, and we're working with families. So we have three parental programs, which is educational parental program and psychological support program. And also we're working with professionals. So it's a quite a big range of professionals, starting from medical nurses, doctors, teachers, and now the employers. So this is briefly about what we're doing.
If anyone wants to help you guys, what are the ways to help, and what are your current needs? Very briefly, Lola and Tahmina then.
So now for us, as we're trying to have a list of the needs and then see what specifically, so we would like to have an address support to the families. And so this is actually, as Tahmina mentioned, is usually this is financial need for most of the families, and the internet need, like to get the online sessions for children. But also we have an initiative now to support families who got affected by COVID with medication, and to support doctors as well, because we used to work with doctors specifically from Istiklal. It's our partners, because we're running a program in this city health center, and we know that these doctors also need lots of support. And I'm originally also of my background, I'm a doctor, and most of my friends' doctors was affected. So we're trying to do this kind of work, and if anyone will be happy to support, we will be very happy.
Okay, Tahmina, very briefly, we have to really conclude the discussion. So what are your current needs and how you can be helped?
I think our current needs are quite nicely put in our appeal. So I would say briefly, it's food to provide basic food to our families, not just in the whole Tajikistan. So at the moment we have 243 families, but the number is growing. Second thing is just to boost the immune system of children and people with Down syndrome. So we, on top of food, we, you know, want to provide fruits and vitamins for them. And then the third component is educational component, like Lola mentioned, and they're doing an amazing job right now in Tajikistan, providing online courses, video courses, Zoom sessions. So all of this, like, we also put in our appeal about the internet access and possibly even tablets, to buy tablets for kids. So these are our main needs at the moment.
Great stuff. Thank you very much for your contribution in these challenging times. So with this, Tahmina Hakimova Riz, activist on the inclusion of people with Down syndrome in Tajikistan, founder of Nazari Digar, a registered charity in the UK, Lola Nasreddinova, founder and executive director of IRODA, Madina Karsakpayeva, PhD researcher who is researching people with physical disabilities and their access to higher education in Kazakhstan, Dilmurat Yusupov, PhD researcher educating for disability rights and inclusive development in Uzbekistan, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, colleagues. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. We will be back next week. Until then, keep washing your hands, keep them away from your faces, and of course, stay safe. Thank you very much, colleagues.